From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationship with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Thanks for tuning in.
And joining us this morning for the show is Jenny Rowland Shea, Senior Policy Analyst with the Center for American Progress. Jenny, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we learned yesterday from the White House that they plan to begin the formal process of selling leases to interested companies in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Tell us a little bit more about this announcement, and then we'll kind of dig into to how we got here.
Yeah, so today officially is when the Bureau of Land Management published their call for nominations for leases to drill in the Arctic Refuge. This is basically an invitation for companies to anonymously submit which parcels within the refuge they might like to bid on. It also kicks off a 30-day public comment period. But really, this is a Hail Mary pass by the Trump administration to try and force a lease sale right before President-elect Biden comes into office.
And this has been this process of getting oil leases in place has been a many years long process, right?
It has. Yes, it all kind of got kicked off in 2017 with the passage of the tax bill, where Senator Murkowski of Alaska was able to, somewhat under the radar, tuck a rider into that package that would open the refuge to drilling. The bill passed with the Trump administration and Republicans touting how much money it would raise and that they would do this kind of despite some of the facts that proved otherwise. And so, this provision was really pushed through despite it being overwhelmingly unpopular with the American public and kind of fiscally dishonest. And the Trump administration have now been kind of rushing through the environmental review processes since then to get this done.
You say fiscally dishonest. Tell us what you mean by that.
Yeah, so the initial bill was saying that the drilling in the Arctic Refuge would raise over $1 billion over the next 10 years for the federal government. That's despite the fact that several independent analyses of looking at similar leasing programs happening in Alaska and in the Arctic found that it's likely to raise no more than $30 million. So over the next 10 years. And so, it's really not, even in the best of circumstances, going to live up to kind of the fiscal promise that was made under this bill.
I want to learn a little more about the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Where is it? And how large a land area does it take up?
Yeah, so the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is in northern Alaska, and it is actually, it's very large, but when we're talking about it in this context, we're talking specifically about the coastal plain, which is about 1.6 million acres. And it is, really an irreplaceable landscape. It is inhabited, or it's relied upon for generations by the Gwich'in people. It's home to an abundance of wildlife that rely on the coastal plain, specifically caribou. It's their calving grounds. So that is specifically what we're talking about when we are talking about the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in this context is the coastal plain.
So by coastal plain, you mean this is land that abuts the Arctic Ocean. It's that far north.
Yes, it is northeast Alaska.
Okay, and if I understand, ANWR takes up roughly 19 million acres, but this lease, a potential or invitations for leasing land is roughly, like you say, 1.6 million acres of that?
Yes. Okay. And so the Trump administration has, through their I would argue incomplete environmental review has said that they will open up that entire 1.6 million acres to the oil and gas industry.
And tell us what those primary environmental concerns are. Give us a little bit more of a detailed picture of what kinds of impacts this kind of energy extraction could have.
Yeah, so some of the things I think that the environmental impact statement that the Trump administration put together, really speedily that kind of came at the cost of reliability and comprehensiveness of the review. You know, they are failing to look at how many polar bears might be killed or harmed. You know, it's arguing that it's not likely to destroy or modify polar bear habitat, even though that's going against many experts' findings that what they've put in this analysis is unreliable. It's kind of understating the loss of caribou habitat that's in the coastal plain, underestimating climate change impacts, failing to analyze the high water demands of drilling. There's actually not very much fresh water in the refuge, and so, you know, they have proposed putting a seawater treatment plant and things that would take, you know, a lot of infrastructure in that area that hasn't fully been analyzed, the environmental footprint of that. You know, other things like refusing to look at the analysis of air quality impacts, looking at the impacts of seismic testing, or oil spills, things like that. And so these are many areas where I think they have fallen short on their analysis. And a lot of that is coming from the fact that they kind of kicked the can down the road saying, you know, we don't need to look at all of this right now. We can look at that when there's actually oil drilling happening, which isn't necessarily the right time to do that. If you are planning to sell leases, I think we can assume that that would lead to oil drilling.
Right, and not to mention all the infrastructure that's required just to get equipment and people up there and settled in and then living in this situation. You know, there's a lot of primary and secondary resources that are required. So, and like you say, and water and wastewater treatment systems and landfills.
Power plants.
It's what happens. Yeah. Yeah, and power plants. It's what happens when humans invade an otherwise, native land. Unsettled
exactly.
land.
Exactly, and this has been, you know, treated as it's called as a wildlife refuge since its inception, and so there really is nothing, you know, none of that infrastructure is up there already, so it would all have to be brought in and starting from square one.
One of the additional challenges that, you know, I've read about is that it will take a really long time to kind of mobilize and get all this infrastructure we've been talking about in place. And by that time, there's some anticipation that we'll be continuing to wean ourselves away from fossil fuels like oil and gas and more towards renewable sources and the resources that are presumably there, that I guess may or may not be there, might not really be valuable any longer. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think that's a really legitimate concern. You know, leasing in the refuge will lock the U.S. into carbon emissions that we really can't afford. Climate change is already devastating the Arctic region, and this would only compound that. I think it gets a little bit also into kind of this looming question of, are any companies even going to be interested in bidding if there is a lease sale at this point? You know, it's very unpopular. There is a really high cost of drilling because there's no infrastructure there. There is a pandemic and an oil glut that's caused many oil companies to report losses and pull back their investments. BP, one of the biggest companies having leases in Alaska, has recently sold all of their assets there, partially responding to, you know, climate change. And so I think that's a question as well, is are these even leases that companies want to bid on because of the big threats looming ahead, like, as you said, climate change and potentially a lack of interest in oil drilling there.
I know some of the major banks and financial institutions have made statements that they will not invest in energy development in the Arctic. Is that a trend that you're seeing continuing?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, it is very unpopular, and most big banks, as you said, have announced that they will not fund drilling in the Arctic. So I think that creates a lot of uncertainty and limits who can actually finance drilling in the Arctic.
Yeah, specifically, I know of two, J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs, have gone on the record to say that they're not going to finance provide any financing to projects in the Arctic, you know, ANWR and possibly other areas. So that was done quite a while ago, correct, Jenny?
Yeah, that's correct. And I think the trend has continued. I don't have a list in front of me, but I believe it is 5 major banks that have pledged not to fund any drilling in the Arctic.
And my email box was full of a few articles where shareholders of the Bank of America are already pressuring BOA to follow suit. So,
yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I was just going to say, I believe you're right. I think Bank of America is one of the only banks that actually hasn't signed on to this yet. I think Chase, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, as you said, they have all kind of jumped on this, and Bank of America is one of the last holdouts. And so, you know, that's very limiting for any company that is looking to participate in a lease sale, because it's going to be very expensive to participate.
Well, if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Jenny Rowland Shea, Senior Policy Analyst with the Center for American Progress, talking about yesterday's announcement from the White House that the Trump administration will begin the process of selling leases to interested companies to allow oil and gas drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. So, Jenny, tell us kind of what's next. How do you see this playing out as we move forward from yesterday's announcement?
Yeah, so this makes a very tight timeline for the Trump administration to actually hold a lease sale if they're going by best practices and by the book. You know, there would next be this 30-day comment period for the call for nominations, and then when it wraps up, they could then post a notice of lease sale. And then under the law, that requires 30 days before a lease can actually be held. So if they're following that timeline, it could put a lease sale, you know, literally just the day or two before inauguration. And then once a lease sale happens, leases are not automatically issued to companies. There is an internal review process at the Bureau of Land Management where they screen for ethical and legal issues. There's an antitrust review period by the Attorney General. And generally, this process takes around 60 days. And given the timeline, if they are to hold a lease sale just before inauguration, it would look like this review process for issuing leases would happen under a Biden administration, where they would have an opportunity not to issue those leases.
Right. So the Biden administration can effectively take over, would assume responsibility for the process, and they could literally cancel the sales.
Right. So, Jim, if the lease sale already happens, they can't necessarily cancel that lease sale, but they will be in charge of reviewing the actual issuance of those leases where they could not issue those. It's important to remember that the entire environmental review underpinning the leasing process was incredibly rushed, legally dubious, and there are already several lawsuits filed against that record of decision. So the Biden campaign ran on a pledge to protect the refuge. So it's not a far leap to assume that when he gets into office, he'll hit pause on this kind of rush to get leases out the door and take a moment to assess the legality, the climate implications, tribal consultation of the analysis that was done by the administration, by the Trump administration.
Okay. I'm kind of just curious of how a lease sale works. Do you have any idea what the mechanics are? Is it literally a bidding process?
Yeah, so companies will submit private bids.
Okay.
And it is, yes, a private bidding process where the highest bid wins out, and basically it's kind of anticlimactic, but they submit these ahead of time, and then generally on a live stream they will read out who has actually gotten won the bid.
Okay. Now, can any company bid on this, or do you have to be a formally registered oil and natural gas company to do so?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Pretty much any company can bid. You know, I heard you say earlier, like, can I buy you know, a parcel or something like that? It has been tried by activists in the past and met with lawsuits from BLM, but it kind of all speaks to a lot of problems, honestly, with the leasing process more broadly, that there is no kind of review process ahead of time for which companies are allowed to bid. And so, you know, as we saw with the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska, which is a similarly large kind of area in Alaska that is frequently put up for lease to oil and gas industry, is that, you know, a company bid on most of the leases that had been created just 3 weeks earlier. And so, you know, that's, it can be shady. And so there's definitely some things that I imagine the Biden administration will also put in place to fix some of these potential loopholes in the leasing system.
So I'm thinking like the Sierra Club or, you know, the NRDC. Could they bid on land, you know, and put in a bid, a legitimate bid? Is that open to them?
Yeah, so this is where I'm not a lawyer becomes okay. Very important, but as I said, because this has been tried by activists in the past, and some of the language under the Mineral Leasing Act says that, you know, whoever bids has to have an interest in actually producing oil. And so I think that's what has been the problem in the past when this has come up. You know, but then you get back to the problems with the leasing system because, you know, oil and gas companies across the country have been sitting on hundreds of thousands of acres of public lands that they have not done any actual drilling on. And so they're just sitting on that. And so kind of what is the, you know, where's the line there? And I think there's probably still questions and some clarity to be gained from that.
Okay. Well, I want to go back to the fact that over the last 30, almost 40 years, according to work done by the New York Times, there has been exactly one exploratory well drilled in Anwar. One. And that seemed to come up fairly disappointing, you know, dry, in effect. So there's a lot of speculation about how much oil might be there, up there. But there is no hard data. Does that support your research?
Yeah, that's exactly right, is that there was one well that was drilled and the results of that were completely secret. I think the New York Times did some investigating that found that it's possible that that came up really disappointing. And yeah. I think that, you know, goes back to the question of, are companies even interested in bidding in this remote frontier with a rapidly changing climate, a potential Biden administration? There are a lot of, you know, roadblocks to actually wanting to lease here. I think you're exactly right. And then at the same time, the Trump administration is still trying to rush through some seismic exploration kind of on the same timeline right before inauguration. And so it's kind of to be seen if they will push that through as well.
Right, because actually the USGS, the U.S. Geological Survey, and maybe other government-funded groups do a lot of work in the area of exploration, initial exploration, seismic work, et cetera. And so that's not even been done. And perhaps that would mean that oil companies, natural gas companies, would be footing the bill to do that work, which then makes the work even, you know, the process even more expensive. And like you were saying earlier, time consuming. It could be years and years and years before this data even comes out to even get a more quantified number on how much oil and natural gas is up there. So there are so many unanswered questions that it doesn't surprise me then to go back and see why Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and some of the other banks, investment banks, say like we're not. There's too much risk associated with this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would just add on to that they're, you know, even if they do begin this seismic work to find out if there's even oil in there, you know, it won't happen before a lease sale happens. And so yeah. Companies, if they do bid, will be doing that completely blind.
Right. And
what
and,
a process.
Yeah. And how long does it, do you know how long a typical lease sale lasts, what the sunset is on a lease sale?
So usually it happens all in one day. So it's really just a couple of hours because companies are bidding ahead of time. There is a process called non-competitive leasing that I know happens in the lower 48, and I'm not positive if it happens here too, but if it happens in Alaska as well. But that's the process by which for several days after a lease sale, companies can bid on any leases that weren't bid on non-competitively for the minimum price of $2 an acre.
$2 an acre.
Wow.
Minimum.
Yes.
Okay.
That is the minimum price, yes.
Okay. But I was wondering how long the lease lasts. Doesn't it retire?
Oh, yes. Yeah. A lease typically lasts for 10 years once it is issued to a company.
Okay. So they have 10 years to show some effort, to work that area, do exploration, et cetera. Okay. Well, we have to wrap up. Where can people go to learn more about, you know, what you might be writing about this and the Federal Register and maybe companies interested in bidding on this, submitting a bid?
Yeah. They can, go to our website at AmericanProgress.org. Also, our Arctic Refuge has a lot of information on this as well. And, of course, the Federal Register and the BLM leasing page for the Coastal Plain is where you can get all the technical information about, you know, the timeline and documents that the Trump administration has put out there.
All right. I will just do a search on BLM leasing page, and I'll probably eventually find my way there. Okay.
Well, that is Jenny Roland Shea, a senior policy analyst with the Center for American Progress, filling us in on the Trump administration's announcement from yesterday to begin the process of selling oil leases in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. So, Jenny, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of This Green Earth.
And if you did, we hope you'll take a minute to rate us, share us, and leave a comment.
You can email us your thoughts and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Join us next week on This Green Earth.